Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. We are here today and hope that you call. 914-338-0164 is the call number. Do press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. We invite you to follow us here on Blog Talk Radio as well as on our social media sites, Facebook and Twitter. You may like our page. We hope that you do. Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. And you can send us a friend request as well, Neil and Kristen Baker. So, what are we talking about today?
Well, there's always something. I mean, in terms of energy and how to interpret the energy according to numerology and the birth date.
Well, we don't want to do too much of that on the show, I don't think. But
well,
you know,
we're saving a lot for the book. But one kind of interesting aspect about energy is that we tend to think that energy starts as soon as there is really conception. And there's energy in the body, and there's a formation of energy moving along for approximately 9 months. But aside from that, the energy, when you look at the matter of the soul, we're not really speaking about conception at all. We're talking about journeys that have been previously experienced with that same constant soul.
Unless you're talking about when the soul was conceived, you know, when the soul began, when the soul started. If we're talking about conception, not conception from birth into the human body, but when did a person's soul specifically originate? I mean, when did the consciousness of that soul begin?
I mean,
you know,
we don't.
So that's a conception.
We don't know. I mean, it can be something from another dimension or another solar system. It could be imbued in the sense that there is dust, that we were formed from dust, and you know, in the Bible it says dust of the earth. But the dust of the earth is really solar. It's beyond our natural terrain. It comes from outer space. And that dust, we're not sure. The molecules of the energies of life coated in the dust of other solar systems may have been the cause or the reason for why we even exist in the first place. I mean, if you go to biblical terms and you just say, well, the earth was formed and God made man and woman from the dust of the earth, maybe, but still that is still considered in many circles just a narrative, fictional text, a metaphorical explanation of how the world was created. There are many attitudes of how the world was created according to cultures and different religions and things like that. But when we get into the idea of the origin of our own individual souls, that may have been part of the root system of the origins of the universe, or not just the universe, but beyond our universe.
The cosmos.
The cosmos, so to speak. Then we get into another idea of why this wandering took place. And wandering seems to be a very strong topic throughout our existence. The wandering Jews and nomadic people, we have a sense that in life, it's very hard to be stationary. We have to move. I mean, in some ways, trees move, the root system, the branches, things like that. But everything seems to have to move. So this idea of movement in our species, it correlates to the idea of movement in a birth date. Because the numbers actually move forward if you look at it as a linear code. It's just not starting and ending on one number. And we don't necessarily number our birth date by the formation of when the world was created or when time was recorded. In other words, we don't, our birthdays don't consist of just a matter of how many days, on what day of the earth were we born. It's separated, it's segmented. And this segmentation of energy in regards to the seasons, the months, the year, the day, all is a part of the division of life through which we travel, correlated to childhood, youth, young adulthood, middle age, and older, the older years. And all of these are bracketed.
And death. And you forgot about death, though. Birth and death.
Which I look at birth and death as more or less a parenthesis in the totality of existence. So if the soul is the sentence, birth and death is within the parentheses of a sentence. And then there's always a comment in those parentheses. So our lives have to comment for something. And it demands movement and action and experience. Now, some people just take life to be movement, action, and experience and don't take it any further. There's no belief in God. There's no concern about the spirit. You move through life, and it's on a very strong linear level. There can be complexities there in terms of what your interests are, your studies, but basically life is severely linear. In our interpretation, at least in our interpretation of numerology, there is a linear code, but the complexities of that code, which we won't really go into, explain that it's just not confined to a linear level.
Right. So that means that the numbers represent or have they represent a lot of things, but part of the number system is because of past life experiences, what happened karmically in those past lives that you brought back to the planet with you, what you need to resolve because of past life offenses, what benefits you have because why is the phone ringing? I think I might know who it is. It stopped. That was weird.
Yeah.
And what needs to be established to move forward on a soul level, whether you are moving into the next lifetime, you know, transcending to the next lifetime or transcending completely off the planet. That's all coded in the birth date.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what makes it very exciting is that in our interpretation of numerology, you're just not looking at a birth date. And then, therefore, you're just not looking at a master number. We have created a system in which sections of the birth date, somewhat redundant, is
segmented sections.
Yeah, well, because it's
I know.
But it is defined by a different terminology. Because we have past lives, we have current life, we have future life, we have a transcendent attitude. And then we have all the innuendos about what we do within the lifetime that is directly coded to the numbers in the birth date. And we'll get more into that when the book is published, because we want to keep some of this
Well, we do. I mean, there's so much we talk about. I mean, yes, there's, I mean, so much we don't talk about, but when callers come on the air, sometimes, you know,
we
reveal certain things.
But that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, it's very superficial, of course. In short readings on the radio, it's difficult to get into the real depth.
The depth. I mean, over 1,000 pages of notes so far. But
we've got to get that total higher. It's been over 1,000 pages.
Well, over 1,000.
Yeah,
it's not over 1,000. It's over.
I don't know where we're at exactly, but...
But everything is accountable to direct information. It's just not... concerned with one topic. The attitude of a birth date has to be designed in such a way, in my estimation, that it's a living code. It's just not a stationary code. Historically, numerology can take on variations of definitions. I'm not saying that there aren't definitions within numerology that expand beyond the deriving a master number, and that there are
several personality profile.
In fact, some sacred books and texts and historical books on numerology goes into great detail about the various factors of what a birth date means.
Well, we had a caller actually. Sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
No, please.
But we're going beyond that into an area that I think is a lot more creative and exciting, and establishes a living code in which one can feel the depth of where their origins are, why they're here, and where they're going. There's a direct coded message in there.
Right. So we had a caller a few shows back who was asking about a karmic number of 19, which is actually not, according to our system of defining birth date, any code that is, I mean, evident to us. 19 is not a part of her code, but some numerology books do go as far as getting into the idea of karma, but unfortunately, it's not, you know, they're really not getting to the root, I don't think, because I guess we would say that the way that we devise the system is somewhat superior, I don't know, to, you know, in terms of finding a karmic number defining the numbers in terms of their of what they represent on a variety of levels.
Yeah.
Karma, the themes of the number, chakra systems, what can be achieved on a linear level as well as on a spiritual level in the birth date. And depending how far one goes in life, there are, you know, different layers in the birth date that they will or will not reach.
Yeah, it is contingent on a person's ability to work through their karma and move forward. And every number holds a different theme, and every number is a destination number. We don't always fulfill our destiny. I mean, a birth date just stands as a birth code, when we were born. But it's so much more than that.
Right.
It's a movement. That's what we were talking about, a wandering. But it's a movement.
Well, even with, you know, certain individuals may have a better chance at getting there, even though they might have identical birth dates. Someone could be, you know, one person could be born on the same date as another person, and the first person might have so much karma that they'll never be able to get to a higher level of actualization in the birth date, whereas the second person.
Right.
You know, it has more advantage, but they have the same birth date. So it's about, you know, reading into the code.
Everyone may be in the sixth grade as a classroom, but not everybody's performing at the same level, and everybody comes with the same history.
Right. And so the numbers mean something different to every person. I mean, there's so many. I mean, what they mean to each individual are completely different and unique to the individual.
So the idea of, The idea of how we interpret something deeper that may not be readily available to the direct interpretation of a birth date does then therefore require the use of a mechanism within the third eye, or maybe intuition. So a gifted reader, in the terminology of numerology, might be able to absorb more from the energy of the numbers than someone who's just analyzing it with the direct information of what the numbers might mean on page. So when I look at a birth date, what happens in my experience is the numbers seem to start to move. They actually move like in a movie with special effects. They move and they form into storylines. So a 2 and a birth date might be revealed as a family, and then from there, opening up of family dramas or situations. It's a strange experience, but it's almost like looking into a wishing well or something. When I was a kid, my grandmother had a wishing well.
Really?
In her backyard. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, I had a game called Holly Hoppy's Wishing Well. So, I mean, that was in my consciousness very early, a wishing well. It's interesting.
Well, she lived in a duplex in Beverly, in Hollywood type area, Beverly Hills. And in her backyard, there was like it was a large grassy area. And then beyond that, there was like a cactus garden. And then beyond that, there was like a secret garden, like the novel. And in that little secret garden filled with flowers and beautiful arrays of different kinds of plants and stuff, but very colorful, like a garden, there was a well, a wishing well. And she always warned me not to climb in it because I could fall in. I don't believe there was any water.
But
sometimes there was water in it.
How deep was it?
Oh, it went down about 10 feet.
Oh, boy, yeah.
So it was pretty, and there was no screen on top. Sometimes they put screens on across the opening, but there was no screen there. But being the kid I was, I would still sneak out and go to that wishing well and climb up to the perimeter, the rim of it, and look down. And it scared me. I thought, my God. So I never was bold enough to take any deeper chances than that, than just looking down, making sure my feet were planted far below the rim. But it was very weird because this was the location where my psychic grandfather lived, which was filled with ghosts and spirits everywhere. I mean, at night I'd sleep in the den and chairs would rock back and forth, and old men would suddenly appear in the chairs staring at me. And I was a little boy sleeping in the den. My grandparents were in their bedroom, and the whole house was filled with spirits. Not that my grandfather didn't tell me that. He told me that they would be there. But this was one of my first experiences in seeing entities in the astral realm and souls that have crossed over, supposedly crossed over, that were having habitation in my grandparents' apartment.
So I just out of curiosity, was your grandma, I mean, were these spirits really manifesting in the physical realm so anyone could see them, or was it just, I mean, was some of it limited to, sight of someone whose third eye was activated?
My grandparents would have dinners and stuff, and their family would come, family members would come, and people would often say, I saw somebody walk through the den, and then they walk right into the wall. Who, what? And so people did see spirit forms, but the majority of it, probably 70-75%, had to be perceived through the third eye, but they did materialize, and there were several of them. And they were reoccurring. Whenever I would go there, I would often see the same ones. But in the well, it was like one
back
of those horror
well.
Films. Back to the well. The well, when I looked down at the well when I was a little boy, I would see faces looking up at me. And it was almost like, the well's dark, but there was some strange illumination. There was some strange light coming. I couldn't tell where it was. But I remember having an accident where I almost lost my eye. I fell and my eye became control.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
I almost lost sight of my eye. But what was strange, and I was about 7 or 8, what was strange was in that eye that was totally closed over because it was swollen, I would suddenly see this inner light, this light, like a flashlight. And the light would be emitting outward to where everything around me was illuminated. So I could actually close my other eye, my good eye, and knowing that my wounded eye was not going to allow any light to come in, with that other eye closed, I would actually see the light because it was the third eye. My grandfather would say, well, that's your third eye. You had this accident to activate and strengthen your third eye. So when I looked down into that well, it was almost like looking into the swollen black eye of my existence. But this light came out. And in the light, I would see these faces looking up at me. Now, we tend to think, oh, you know, souls living the earth. And to some extent, that's true. There's a dimension in the body of the earth where souls live. My uncle, unfortunately, committed suicide and entered one of those portals. And I witnessed it. But in this respect, in seeing the spirit coming up, and then it rose, almost like vapors, like the vapors in a swamp or something. And there's a terminology for this, but they rose and virtually came up to the rim of the well. And I was alone there. And I remember I had an illustrated book of fairy tales, Grimm's fairy tales. And some of it was about the frog talking to the princess, and the frog came out of the earth. And it was almost like I was living an illustration. And the spirit that came out.
I feel like I'm listening to a book on tape.
Yeah.
That's what you sound like.
Well, it was mystifying.
Yeah.
And when the spirit came to the rim of the well, it spoke in a language I knew was not English, but I understood it.
Yeah.
I understood it. And the strangest thing was that I didn't see the face really move the lips. It was all through the apparatus of the mechanism of the third eye. So I was totally engrossed in the energy of the third eye. And in this respect, these spirits were speaking to me through that channel. Now, what they said, I quite couldn't comprehend because of my age, but I knew it was mystifying language, and I knew that there were secrets that were being revealed to me, which I later put into a book, recalling it, the episode, and put into a book that was written, in the Cult of Sleeper.
Oh, okay.
But the attitude of these spirits speaking took on great significance because they began to tell me things that were going to happen in the future. And not just personal things, but things of the earth, things that were going to be happening in the earth. And I would start to talk about these things. So, you know, it's odd, you know, a 7-year-old or 6-year-old talking, maybe I was 8. I was just commanding my sense of language because I really didn't speak English until I was 7 or 8. That's a different story. But this language that I start to explain, and I was already writing science fiction stories and little stories going on and drawing pictures of the spirits that I was seeing. Some of them were representations of the spirits of this earth that were emerging from this wishing well. And at one point I told my grandfather, there's spirits in that wishing well. And he was very quiet. He took me by the hand and he led me to the wishing well. And he said, watch this. So I was sitting there. And he waved the palm of his hand over the wishing well. And out of it, it was astounding, came all these spirits, and they gathered around us. And then I witnessed him speaking to them. Now, I didn't know what they were saying. I couldn't understand what they were saying. But nonetheless, they were all talking to him at once, and it sounded like gibberish to me. Like you're in, like a little boy being in a train station, just hearing a lot of different voices echoing everywhere, people talking, but you can't really make out anything. You just hear the human tongue. Well, this was spirit tongue. They were all talking. And then they suddenly stopped, and including my grandfather, they all looked at me and put out this beam of light, like a ray of light directly pointing at me. And then I became unconscious. I don't know what happened, but it was a very strange event. My grandfather was really a mystifying character. But now he was also the one that introduced me to numerology, because he would start to tell me that numbers are not numbers, they're symbols. Because I was having a little bit of difficulty.
Well, because you're more, yeah, I mean, naturally gravitated towards verbal writing and reading. That was,
yeah.
And you kind of rebelled against the mathematical.
I didn't. It was too dry, too cold, too heavy. So, but he would start to tell me what a 3 represents, what a 2 represents. And I remember him sitting, and he was a stern man, so if I didn't get it right, he'd hit me on the head with a newspaper. But suddenly I started to see the numbers changing, morphing. So it was like looking into that well where the numbers actually changed their form and became pictures. And out of the numbers rose spirits. And these spirits would tell me things. Well, now, you can't really put that into a book of numerology. But what it brought forth was a further explanation of what numbers mean. So when we incorporate these numbers into a book of numerology and explain their importance, it goes so far beyond what's ever been written about numerology that, and you could say it's just the musings of a madman or something, it's just imaginative. But the proof of the numbers is that throughout my whole lifetime, I have relied on the magical interpretation of numbers and have gotten very, very, very good results in terms of verifications and confirmations about what happens in people's lives over this matter. So as we're, you know, discussing this topic of what is the mystification of numbers, and as you know, Kristen, in our work, the deeper you look into a number, the more you see. It's a unique experience, but it does happen. And then you have to use a little bit of knowledge in that as well, because you have to be aware of what the numbers mean before you even enter into the realm of the astral figuration.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And for those people who may listen to the show and are interested in this psychic information, numerology, and things like that, but aren't going to really take the steps to open the third eye, you can actually look at a birth date, and if you have enough knowledge, you can get some good information from those numbers without using your third eye. So, I mean, it's limiting to not have an activated third eye and look at a birth date, but you can still, if you're using a system of knowledge, define a birth date according to those terms.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's accessible to, at least so in the book that we're writing.
It's going to be accessible to everybody, yeah. So you don't have to, you know, go through deep psychic training in order to apply this to your life.
No, I mean, it's like a book that's going to have arithmetic in it, and then it's deeper into the book. It might have algebra, then it has geometry, then it has physics. It all depends on how deep you want to go in terms of the content and how much you want to get out of it. But the other factor is that a birth date is just not a controlled number. It's not a fixated number. We actually get to have some creative output.
Well, there's the idea of movement again.
Yeah. Because even though each number is a destiny in it, in and of itself, the cause of action the prompting of initiative movement towards those numbers will end up in how strong the vibration of that number, how strong that result will be. So let's say you have a certain number in your birth date and you're going towards the theme of that number. The input you apply towards the destination of that theme and that number will result in how powerful that number will show up as a theme in your life. So that's why in my world, even though I knew there were certain destinies I had to accept and work through and act ignorant of the results, like I didn't know this was going to happen. Even though I had to go through that, I was well aware of the underlying factor that what I was going to need to do and how I was going to perform and what I could creatively do to get through that number, establish the richest result I could, negative or positive, and then move forward towards ultimate destinies that were forthcoming that I could see. One of the problems of being psychic is that you see your future. You see it. And there are people who have seen their future. Mark Twain said he knew he was going to die. Christ knew he was going to die. There are people who know their future, and it's not always as dramatic as death as it is the implication that you see something good. But when you see something and you know how to, you can see the route to how to get there, but you can also see the obstacles, karmic and otherwise, one has the advantage of moving as directly as they can towards that destination and having the best possible results.
And now you've reached the pinnacle of staring at a cat on the driveway and on the sidewalk for hours and hours every day. This is the highlight of our lives,
well,
everyone.
You know, I'm familiar with that because I used to study ants. And one time I was leaning over and studying ants on the ground in this very large church grassy area. It was very large. And I was just sitting, bending over, studying these ants with a magnifying glass. And I heard a helicopter above me. I heard it, but I didn't pay much attention. Anyways, after about 20 minutes, the helicopter actually landed. I don't think it was supposed to, but the helicopter actually landed in the churchyard. It was a huge grassy area, and it was very easy for it to do. And these two men came out. They thought I was dead. They couldn't figure out what it was. And when I stood up, I was only about 14. When I stood up with the magnifying glass and said, "Oh, I'm studying ants," I'm surprised they didn't take me to the loony bin because they looked at me like I was some kind of nut. Maybe if they were E.O. Wilson, they would have said, "Oh, well, that's fantastic."
Wait, did they land to for you?
Yeah.
Did you must have? I mean, a helicopter landing has to create a lot of wind and noise.
You see, the area. This was when this area was pasture land, and large grassy area. It wasn't like what you see today. So this was back in 1965. And so it was a whole different ballgame. And I don't know if they were supposed to land, but I think they were a police helicopter. And so they had that jurisdiction to make that choice.
I see.
And but I used to study ants. And the thing about ants, that's another fascinating thing, because ants are very fascinating to study. And I would recommend anybody look at E.O. Wilson, his books, The Insect Societies, where he talks about the insects and how they communicate and whatnot. Fabulous naturalist biologist who also lost his eye.
You didn't lose your eye.
I didn't lose my eye, but he lost one eye he's lost his vision because he was fishing and the hook went into his eye.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Oh. But he's a fascinating character. But
interesting that he would be so interested in insects and study them, but then be a fisherman and kill.
Well, that was when he was younger, and
That's right. And then that prompted him to.
Oh, that well, that was not exactly that didn't prompt him, but He wasn't, that was just an episode that happened with his eye. He was a naturalist. But no, the one that you're thinking of, Walt Disney actually shot an arrow or a gun at an owl and killed it. He was out hunting and he actually killed an owl, the story goes. And he felt so guilty about killing that owl that he made a vow that he would never hunt again. And so all these nature shows came out. Walt Disney had fabulous nature shows that won Academy Awards. And in their day, they were just tremendously. The Living Desert won the Academy Award. And he vowed never to kill again an animal.
Yeah, but I'm thinking story. Yeah, but I'm thinking of this guy. I remember this story about the hook in the eye.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about I relate to him because the way that he looked into the lives of insects and studied their communication patterns and looked at it purely on a scientific level, but revealed so much about the insect world, correlates to the idea of how we talk to spirits and how we talk to guides and how we talk to ghosts. Because these entities, including angels, they have a language that is not directly connected to the human tongue. Their language, you don't sit down and have a cup of coffee with a ghost. I mean, you can, I guess, if you're Topper. But but normally speaking, you don't do these things. You speak to spirit through the third eye. And so you have to understand the language of the third eye, which begins with the language of imagination. So we have these brains that capture more than what we see and hear and analyze and collect data on. We have these brains that expand into worlds that where there is imagination. Now, we don't even know if any creatures do this. We can say that a dog has a dream and he's running, but that's related to direct experience. Human beings dream outside of the realm of experience. They have this capacity in their brain to visualize and imagine things that aren't there, that never were there, that are completely imagination, which comes from the word image. So the image of the language of talking to a spirit or a guide first comes through imagery. It's a language of images that you directly send to the entity. That's where you start off. So you're not really speaking. You're speaking through images, which is common to the third eye.
Well, and you can even do that with animals, sending images to the animals to communicate. And it actually does work.
It does. It does work. And personally, I know it works. So, yes, that's true. But when you're dealing with now an imaginary world, you know, anything from a spirit, a guide, an angel, which has been totally impacted by literature and things like this. And then you get into the element of fairies and elves and sprites and all this stuff. Things of the underworld, more or less demons or darker forms or orbs that seem to hold consciousness, that seem to have some sort of penetrating intelligence. All of these things, because even our atoms or molecules are coded with information, why not an orb? So all of these things that we have, you can't really utilize through the human tongue. You have to speak on a level that is more energized by imagery, by the imagination. And then suddenly it clicks in. It's a strange feeling when you finally conquer this art form, if you will, and you hear information being sent back to you, and there's actually now communication going on. So I had to adjust to the fact that that when I talk to somebody simultaneously, I'll be hearing spirits and guides talk to me through my what is called the third ear. And that becomes somewhat dramatic.
Let's bring on this caller. we have a caller. We actually had another, but they dropped in the midst of our conversation. So we'll bring on 305. Hello.
Oh, hi, Christine. I just called you. I just called in, and this is the only thing I've heard Neil say the whole time, because I just called in, about hearing spirit. Yeah, conversation in the brain there, over the shoulder, over the head. My name's Eileen. I haven't spoken with you, listened to you in a very long time.
Okay.
Hi, Eileen. So what was the conversation about? I didn't hear.
Well, I mean, it's kind of morphed from the beginning, but we were talking about the birth date code and how it is more than just a linear code, how it goes back to past lives and all the multiple interpretations of the code, and you know, it was really some of these experiences growing up with spirits and his grandfather. So it's been kind of a lively chat. I remember you're a five, Eileen, but in Florida, and you're the artist.
Thanks.
But what is your birth date again, please?
June 28, 1951.
She's the one with the really tropical paintings.
Oh, those are wonderful paintings. Yeah, my God, you're very talented.
Thank you very much, Neil. Yeah,
okay.
I've been expanding out.
Yeah, you know what? I thought of you recent, like last week, because I saw a woman wearing a print that reminded me of your paintings. It was an article of clothing, a designer article of clothing. So
nice.
Anyway, yeah. Okay. So what's going on? What's your question, Eileen?
I started making these rugs, and I'm in this quandary here because I have to design a fourth one, yet I don't want to jump in until I start getting orders.
Oh.
That's my what's happening for me right
now. Is it difficult? I mean, is it hard for people to place orders for something that they have not seen? Or they just trust that you'll create something beautiful for them?
Yeah, number two. They always do. And they're always more happy than when they expected. It's just a matter of, I put it on Facebook, I put it on my other Facebook, I put it on Instagram. So it's just a matter of, I don't jump too fast until I start getting requests. You know?
Uh-huh. And so are you having a block, or what's going on?
No block.
Wait, I mean, why haven't
you... I'm just looking. It's only a week. It's only a week. It's a new product. It's a brand new product. And I exposed it at a big trade show, and I just have to contact various people about my wool rugs, and these are nylon with back, rubber backing, so they don't skid. I mean, they're pretty cool. Really cool.
Do they have designs in them? Are there patterns?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're nature designs on them.
Oh, that's fabulous. Yeah.
Yeah, and I put them up on my website, and since I talked to you and all that, I have a brand new website, and it's really beautiful, and that's working nice, and I'm reaching people all over the world.
Oh,
that
why didn't
had
you
me
share that? With everybody, so that they can look.
Thanks. It's my name. Should I just say it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, it's Eileen. Well, you say your last name. I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, it's EileenSites.com, but the way you spell it is E-I-L-E-E-N, S for Sam, E-I-T-Z.com.
Okay. All right. So what's your question about? There's
timing,
no
I suppose.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's just the timing of the situations that are coming up right now. Because, I do astrology too, so I see everything's moving towards, it's in 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, like that, those planetary houses.
So in regards to the timing, it's just the projects that you're doing, the rugs, and are there other things going on that you're involved in?
Always.
Yeah,
but it's a quiet time because now it's spring, right, going into summer. So from where I live, everything is quieter. The business of the business out there is based on tourism.
Yeah.
But it's never a dull moment. I mean, I'm always getting an order to do here, even if it's an individual, you know, compared to a gallery. So
mm-hmm.
it's just timing.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that she's turning 68 years old in June, and those are her first and third numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that eight involving your fire number is going to be important, involving what's going on in terms of activating some, you know, money, power.
Right. We see the thing that there's a certain journey you're taking, Eileen, that's not particularly just spontaneously creative. It's karmic.
That's the
because
six,
what
eight.
You're doing, when you think about it, you have a painting on a wall. Then you transpose that painting into a rug form, which is now at the feet, which is at the base chakra. But the idea is that it's rooting people to their big foundation.
I like that.
And showing them, it was what earlier in the show I was describing a wishing well and looking down into the earth and seeing how the wishing well opened up and I saw spirits and guides emerging from it. When you open up the earth, there's riches. And what you're really saying is to look deep, into the soul of the earth. Now, I know that's a little bit esoteric.
I think the same way, Neil. So we're good.
Okay, good. So, and this is an ancient form because really, you know, the ground is sacred.
Yes.
That's been stated in all kinds of religions, that the ground is sacred and that in sacred ground, you're to remove your feet, your shoes. So if you remove your shoes and you plant them on the so-called rug of your design, you're implanting the soles of your feet into a design of life. It's just
I love that. That is so important to me because that's exactly what I came here to do on the earth. Yes.
Yeah, it is coded in your energy, so it's purposeful.
And the six and eight also is a five, so that's your master number as well,
yeah,
and it's
yeah.
your whole creative expression and.
So
on a karmic level.
You're pursuing and also following your destiny.
Cool.
And you're doing so in a creative form that reconnects you with the earth, not at eye level. That's fine. Where the eye level is parallel to, the painting itself. But now we're looking down inward, and I think that's vastly important because now we get into Gaia and the Mother Earth.
Gaia, and
Mother Earth and birth and rebirth and even death for that matter, the recycling of energy. So I think that's fabulous that you're doing it. I think it's going to be very successful.
I think it's interesting that, you know, before she mentioned the rugs, I told her that I thought of her in relation to fabric. So, it's connected, you know.
Yeah, well, I've been doing my hand-painted fabrics for about, 8 years, making clothes out of them, and they're the same designs, but now, you know, I can expand it to new ones. Problem is, with that business, and then I made pillows so people could be leaning on Mother Nature and beautiful colors, and that company I was working with, they gave up their business. So now so I have some of my fabrics left to sell, and now I've been asking God to make it so that I can connect to hotel projects so I can put the rugs in the hotels and then the artwork on the walls and then do the bedspreads and, you know, immerse in it. Because the things that you see out there are not, you know, they want metal and they want silver and they want plain and they want this.
Really?
So little by little, the right people, as you say, Neil, that are in my destiny have been finding me, and it's all about timing.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the hotel opens up the world traveler.
That's what I was thinking, you know, going abroad. I you know, with her designs, it seems like they would fit in, you know, in environments that are hot and, you know, upscale. I would think upscale hotels like Ritz-Carlton or what are some other Four Seasons and in locations that are destination,
the
tropical
Hilton
destinations.
Hotel.
I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking even a higher end than a Hilton.
Yeah.
Like
I mean,
you know, exclusive.
I agree with you, Christine.
Yeah.
I agree with you. And yet I re-met with this woman, and she connected with me with the mermaid energy, you know, and it was her birthday, and I gave her a gift of one of my pieces, and she just took over all the Wyndham hotels.
Oh.
And the La Quintas and all these other ones, because, you know, human beings are human beings. The soul is the soul, and if the heart is there and the spirit is there and I can reach it, whatever way I can reach it, it's then I'm doing my purpose, right? So she says, I got your back. Come fall is when we're going to start planning all this out.
Oh, okay. So you've got an in with somebody for the hotel.
Yeah, I'm across the board. But I agree, because the people who can order my rugs and all, they have a little bit more money and then get me into commissions, et cetera, and hotels, lobbies and all that, because I really enjoy that. And I am a world traveler. Since I talked to you, I went on a cruise ship teaching art around Europe, and I went to the South Pacific. And, you know, I reached and I touched places where people were indigenous tribes and all of that. So I'm always up for challenges like that, too.
Raffles is the hotel chain I was thinking of, Raffles.
I never heard of that. And art,
yeah, look it up. Raffles, like a lottery raffle.
You know, there's a mystifying quality in your name and numerology. Your name itself, Eileen, the spelling of it amounts to your karmic number 32. And then your last three letters all borrow 5, which is 15. Which is your inverted year. So there's even a mystifying element in your number system in terms of your name that is, I can see that has some value in that, which means that your journey, you see what's happened is your soul has expanded into all these different corners of the globe. So you have to take this missionary type trip. You have to.
Yes, you said it. That's exactly how I feel when I travel. I say I feel like I'm a missionary through the artwork, spreading the light of God. It's so crazy, but I know exactly what you're explaining, because that's exactly how I share that with people.
Yeah.
That's
not
great.
Religion. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really exciting, and
no,
I'm taking a trip to Quebec in July because I've never been up there.
Wow.
Lucky
cool.
you.
To be going on a big art painting trip with a girlfriend of mine who was my student crossing the South Pacific. Yeah, an artist.
Well, we are
too. I just wake up and I say,
We're taking a trip to the edge of our driveway and observing the cracks in the cement.
With our cat. We have a cat that actually came out of our olive tree last year. It was living in the base of our olive tree. It was a rather mystical experience. But, anyway, she's now our cat, and we're quite limited on what we're able to do. We don't get to go anywhere anymore because we're going to let her go outside by herself. So.
That's great idea.
You have a kitty litter box, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all use it. We all
use
it. Yeah, it's a family affair.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
we wish you luck and continue to keep in touch with us.
Think of us while you're traveling. And follow our page. Join our
page.
We have a new page for the radio show, the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour on Facebook. And you can send us a friend request or any and all of the above. We appreciate it.
I thank you so much. I'm going to keep listening.
Okay.
Take care.
We're actually off the air. Yeah, we're done.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, it's the end of the show. Yeah. Maybe you can find the replay in the archives.
Okay. Hey,
okay.
Neil, you and I are
Wait, you're back on, Eileen.
I was
Go
just
ahead.
Telling Neil that he and I are born the same year.
Yeah, we are.
And from New York, so we have that energy from as a New Yorker would be, you know.
Well, Neil's from L.A. He's not from New York.
Yeah, not New York.
Well, why did I read New York somewhere? No?
You didn't. Mm-mm.
No. But we are the same year. That's true.
But you know what, Eileen? I thought Neil was from New York when I talked to him. But that, you know, for initially, there's something. I think I know what the connection is, actually.
King Kong.
No. But I know why you're picking up a certain thing in him that is probably a similar similar thing that you two share. But anyway, we'll leave that a mystery. Okay, Eileen, take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank
okay,
you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we are back on the air on Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Bye.